Okay. Well then, hello and welcome everybody to the first tutorial lesson of formal methods in software engineering. So let's first start with now it already doesn't work anymore. Now it works. Let's first start with some organizational stuff. You already know that the homework in this tutorial in these tutorials will make up 50% of your grade. So 50% comes from the homework exercises and 50% from the oral exam at the end of the semester. Exercise sheets will appear regularly. I don't know yet if it's going to be really weekly or if there are going to be larger exercises which require more than 1 week to solve. And these larger exercises would also then probably have to be handed in groups instead of individually. And I think I will continue with the practice that I had last year, that submission will be just by email. My email address will also be on the exercise sheets, and you can just send an email before the next tutorial with your solutions. There are going to be some theoretical exercises, probably even on the first sheet, to bridge the gaps between the lecture and the tutorials. But most of the exercises will be programming exercises or modeling exercises. And in class, of course, we will discuss the homework. We will present solutions that are, in some ex to some extent, special or interesting, and we will compare them and discuss problems that you had in the homework. So it's not the case that you always have to have everything correct in order to get full points, but it's more that you understand what you're doing, because sometimes it's also difficult to get it right, and this is an inherent problem of this verification business. And of course, then we will experiment with the tools during class and learn new features, new commands, new constructs. But of course, it's also important that you actively participate. And if you have any interesting questions, then just ask, and we can maybe find out something more interesting about what we're doing. Okay, no, but any questions about the organizational business? If not, then we're going just to start with model checking and temporal logic. So it should have transpired by now that this is what we are dealing with in the first part of this lecture. So we're doing a special kind of model-based verification. So I subsumed it here under model-based verification techniques, which can have different manifestations. So what they all have in common is that we describe a system and its behavior in some mathematically precise and unambiguous manner. And then we use algorithms to explore the states of these models and probably all possible states of these models. And there are three different ways to do this. So the first one is model checking, which we are doing here in the course, which is an exhaustive search of these states. So we build the state graph, we build the complete finite state machine, and then we run a program that exhaustively checks if some property holds in any of these states or in all of these states. Then a second method would be simulation, which is what we are not doing, and which is what Chair 10, I guess, is doing, where you restrict to a set of scenarios and you perform experiments on these scenarios. So you're not looking at the whole state graph, but you restrict yourself to a small portion of it and then you run experiments. And the third one, you also all know that, is testing, where you have a real implementation of this model. So you don't test usually on a model, but you test on an implementation of this model. Model checking Basically looks like this. So we have a model checker here, this green box, which we take as given for the moment. So you will learn in the lecture what makes up this model checker, what's in this box. And this model checker takes a system, or rather a model of a system, and together with a temporal logic formula in our case. And these temporal logic formulae, they state some properties about this system. And then the model checker just computes if this property holds for the model or if it doesn't. And the interesting thing is that if it doesn't, then it also gives us a counterexample. And we will see in the course of this tutorial how these counterexamples look like and what we can do with them. So let's first look at models of systems. Maybe later. First, let's look at the tools that we are using. So new SMV is the first tool, which stands for New Symbolic Model Verifier. And you can model synchronous and asynchronous finite state systems using new SMV. But this asynchronous stuff is dropped almost already. So they still support it to some extent. You can use processes to model asynchronous systems, but it's not, it has no future in USMV because this new program, new XMV, already dropped it. And to model asynchronous systems, you need to do this on a higher level, not in the new SMV language. And new SMV can verify properties formalized in LTL or CTL. So today we are only going to see LTL, and we're thinking about what we can do with better with CTL, but CTL has not yet been introduced in the lecture formally, so no syntax or so. So we're just doing LTL today. And of course, because it's not an annotational language where you have some program and then you verify this program, we need to learn a new syntax, how to construct models. And just a few words about new XMV. I already said that it dropped the support for asynchronous processes. But it also has new techniques for infinite state systems. So here it's only finite state systems. Using new XMV, you can also describe systems that have infinite states, an infinite number of states. And they are solved then using SMT-based techniques. And I already said last time that SMT means satisfiability modulo theories. And we're not going into detail here, but maybe later in the semester. Now we can talk about the syntax and how to construct models in new SMV. The full syntax is described in the new SMV manual. I encourage you to skim the manual at least and have a look at how to construct programs, because I cannot just put everything on slides and tell you how to do it. You need to work on it a bit for yourselves. And I think the syntax for new SMV and new XMV is basically the same, so there's not much of a difference. So a basic new SMV model looks like this. So we have modules, and of course a main module which has to be there and from which the model is constructed then. And such a module can have input variables. And in any module, you can define variables yourselves with a very restricted set of types. So there's only Boolean values, integer values, and words, which are, you cannot just type word, but you need to enter how long this word should be. So words, word one, word six, word 64, whatever, which are just basically byte values. So, And you can have enumeration types, and we will see this later. These are the most common types in USMB. Then there's an assign section in every module, or you can have an assign section in every module where you can give the initial value of a variable and the transition the next value of this variable in the transition system. And as you can see already, you have the usual connectives for Booleans, and also you have plus and so on for integers. So that's all there. And then there's an additional define section where you can just define abbreviations, basically. And then you can use these modules to build larger systems. So here, this main module calls the counter cell three times, calls this first thing bit 0, bit 1, bit 2. So what we get in the end here is a counter that has 3 bits. So now a question to you, how do we translate this into a finite state machine, into a transition system? So how many states would this have? Or what would be a state of such a system? Yeah?
So you have two states for the value of each counter cell and three counter cells, so we should have 2 to the power of 3 states.
Yes, exactly. So you have 8 states here. So for every value for every variable that you have, so in this this case 3 variables, because you call this counter cell 3 times, and each time a single variable is created. And this value has a Boolean type, so it has 2 possible values. Maybe a better choice of name would have been good. So what we get in the end is a system with 8 states. Representing the contents of the variables. So of course, in this case, because it's just a counter, we can also just write the binary numbers here, 100, 101, 110, 111. Right? And the transitions, of course, would be what? Well, okay, it's a counter, so I already told you that. So from 0 to 1, to 2, to 3, to 4, to 5, to 6, to 7, and then back again to 0, right? So this system runs in an indefinitely. It never stops. I also put that here. Oh, a bit different, but it's the same picture with a different arrangement of arrows, I hope. 0, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, it's the same picture. Isomorphic. Okay, that I already said. And now we can see if new SMB also does this for us. So we can indeed use the interactive mode of NewSMB to have a little bit of insight into what it's doing. And I think I already prepared that counter here. This should be exactly what we had. Okay, there's an additional LTL formula in there, but it doesn't matter for the moment. So let's just call new SMB with interactive mode on counter. And then there's this command called go, which is an abbreviation for a lot of commands, which we don't need to know. So we just type go. And there's a print reachable states command. With minus V for verbose, we can have all the variable combinations. So it says here the system diameter is 8, so we have 8 states, and all of them are reachable. And this is exactly what we have on the board here. So bit 0 value, bit 1 value, bit 2 value, and all possible combinations. Right? Yeah, of course, in the manual, there's also a list of commands that you can enter in this interactive new SMB mode. Now, put that here for later for you to read.
Can you go back to the code for
me? Sure. The slide, or?
Yeah, that one, or the previous one. So, yeah, that one. Where exactly are the state transitions in there? So, how does it determine what's suitable and what's not?
So the state transitions are given here at this point. So you have only one clock. It's a synchronous system. Everything happens at the same time. So each of these next transitions is triggered at the same time, okay, for each variable.
And then you specify the states below to use the carry out.
Mm-hmm.
Because carry out is defined dependent on carry in, that line above there is the state transition.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Any more questions? Okay. Then, yeah. And now that we have a system, we can, of course, test some properties of this system. NewSMB has generated the model as expected, and how do we now query the analyzer? So how do we state every time bit 0 is set to false, in the next step it switches to true? So this is, of course, that the smallest bit always flips. Or another one, is it infinitely often the case that bit 2 is set to true? Which should also be true because this runs indefinitely and it doesn't stop at some count. So we already learned in the lecture that we do this using we can do this using LTL. Linear temporal logic with the basic connectives of Boolean logic and this next operator and the until operator, from which we can derive this finally. And well, Tadeusz says it doesn't have a real meaning, but it's sort of like globally then this weak until and the release. And to see how we can define such properties, let's first look at a simple example to know more about LTL. So this is also a finite state transition system with a set of atoms here and a labeling function that assigns to Q1, the first state here, the empty set of labels, to Q2, the set of the singleton B. Q3 gets the atom A, and Q4 gets the both atoms A and B. So in a logic sense, A is valid, or A is satisfied in state Q3, and A and B are satisfied in state Q4, and so on. So can you tell me paths pi 1 and pi 2, so I use superscript here because the subscript is already defined as cutting a path. can you tell me paths pi 1 and pi 2 in the model that start in state 3, Q3, such that these temporal logic formula hold? Anyone? So what Q3, Q1, Q2, and? Q2. Okay, so let's check if this is true. So first we start with Q3, and then it should hold then in the next step, not B should hold. So in Q1, which is the next step, not B should hold. So it should not be the case that B holds. And in Q1, indeed, nothing holds, so that's true. And additionally, globally, not A or not B should hold. So for all of these states, let's see if this is true. So in Q3, A holds, so we need to satisfy not B. And yes, B is not true here, so it's okay. For Q1, we already established that nothing holds, so that's fine. And for Q2, A doesn't hold, so it's also fine. And this path goes on indefinitely, so of course it's true, yes. So that's pi 1. And pi 2. Okay, let's check. So there's another next operator here, so we need to check this one first. And that should A and B should hold, and this is true. So yes, that's fine. And then finally, not A or not B should hold. Yeah, and that's also fine because Q3 doesn't satisfy B, so that's okay. So in this path, finally, and indeed infinitely often, this is the case. Yeah, that's okay. And another question: can you think of a formula alpha such that the state Q3 satisfies alpha? So we have heard in the lecture that a state satisfies a formula in this model if all paths starting from this state Q3 satisfy the formula. So is there a property of this small system that holds in this state Q3? Could be a simple one. Yeah? FB. So let's check. MQ3 satisfies FB. So for all states, it must hold that finally B, for all paths starting from Q3, it must hold that finally B holds. So, well, of course, there are lots of paths here, so let's check a few random ones. So let's check this one that we already have, Pi2. And finally, B holds there, of course, because Q4 satisfies B. So a technique now would be to check if we can find a path that doesn't satisfy B. So where is B not satisfied? It's only in Q1 and in Q3. So whenever we enter Q2 or Q4, we're already satisfying this formula. Now we can have a look. Well, can we somehow build a path, an infinite path, of course, that doesn't touch any of Q2 and Q4? And this cannot happen because we start in Q3, and then we can only go to Q1 once without having to go to Q2 where B is satisfied. So yes, this would be an example for us for a formula that holds in this state Q3. Okay. Any questions about this so far? Good, because then we can put it into implementation. And for this, there's the keyword LTL spec. So with, I think you can also just use spec without the LTL prefix. And this should, I guess, accept both LTL and CTL formulas. So I'm not sure about that, but I can look that up. But with LTL spec, you're on the safe side and you can pass it an LTL formula. And the connectives are as usual. So the ampersand is used for conjunction, a bar for disjunction, and an exclamation mark for negation. And there's no weak until. So if you want weak until, then you need to implement it yourself. By using these translations that we had in the lecture. And releases is called V instead of R, but we won't use it now anyway, because it's a bit complicated, as you heard in the lecture already. And of course, then you can use Boolean variables as the atoms in these formulae. Now you can try to use this counter example, not a counter example, but this example of a counter, and try to specify some things that are true or false, and then tell me what happens when you run USMV on them. So, of course, I should show you how to run this, maybe. It's quite simple. So not from the in interactive interface, but you just call it using new SMV and then the counter, and it carries out something. Oh, and now I showed already something that I wanted to know from you, but okay. I can just put it online quickly if you want. It's also in the examples. Let me see. Yes, indeed, it is there. So it's in the new SMV distribution in the examples folder under example_CMU. Yeah. Counter.smb. So there are already specifications in there, but just ignore them or, well, delete them. So you can delete these two specifications and add your own. So, for example, you can formulate these properties that I already put there. But try one that fails. Any success stories yet? or fail stories, maybe?
Syntax fails.
Okay. Why?
Well, basically just trying to figure out how it works in general, so...
I'm not sure if you maybe need to bracket it somehow. And... Type error. Bit zero not defined. You need to also specify bit zero dot something because bit zero is just a counter and not a variable. Mm-hmm. That works. Yep. Any problems? This one? Ah, this one.
interesting.
Was ist denn der Query?
Ich habe hier eine tolle Spec geschrieben und das macht hier keinen Unterschied, ob ich das negiere. Also so hätte ich es jetzt irgendwie erwartet, um zu ausdrücken, dass es sich immer abwechselt. Aber egal, ob ich das so schreibe oder eben so, beides mal sagt, das wäre true.
Darf ich nochmal sehen? Ich glaube, dass die... Ich glaube, das bindet anders. Ich glaube, das bindet jetzt das Next an. An die Implikation. Ach so, nee, aber das Finally macht's ja aus, ne?
Ach, das ist Finally?
Ja.
Okay. Ich hab's mir ein Stück heute angeguckt. Aber
ja, und das ist, wenn Bit 0 Value im nächsten Schritt zum Beispiel 1 wäre, dann ist ja im aktuellen Schritt 0.
Ja.
Aber durch das Finally wird natürlich auch das andersrum akzeptiert als eine gültige Belegung. Und das passiert immer. Also egal, ob du sie, ob was auch immer du hier hinten hinschreibst.
Okay, das heißt, ich will wahrscheinlich kein Finally.
Nee.
Cool. Ich habe also, das erstbeste Beispiel aus dem USMV-Handbuch genommen. Das cool, F ist bestimmt
cool
oder so.
Nee, F ist finally.
Okay. Ja. Nein, intuitiv hätte ich gesagt, das sollte stimmen. Ich habe hier quasi im Modul des Counters habe ich eine LTL-Text weggeschrieben, die sagt, entweder ist Value oder Next ist Value. Das fehlt mir aber mit Counter-Example.
Okay.
Ist das Next auch in meinem Modul, das globale Next quasi?
Achso, das ist jetzt im Counter. Das,
genau. Also ich hätte jetzt nämlich angenommen, dass es dann innerhalb von dem Modul der Next ist, wo ich die Modulen
ändere. Nee, ich denke nicht. Das müsste das Globale sein, weil es gibt nur einen Counter sozusagen. Also es, ich denke, das LTL-Spec hier spricht wirklich für das... Es ist eine gute Frage, wie das spezifiziert ist in der Manual. Das müsste man wahrscheinlich nachlesen, was da passiert, wenn man LTL-Spec innerhalb von einem Modul schreibt.
Okay, also du bist ja auch nicht sicher, was passiert.
Nee, ich bin mir nicht sicher. Was gibt er denn für ein Counter-Example?
Also warte, vielleicht ist ein Counter-Example dafür.
Ja, das kann natürlich sein. Ja. Das ist schon das Richtige. Wo sagt er jetzt das hier? Da, Verification value or next value in bit 2 is false. Und dann kommt ein Counter-Example. Erst sind alle auf. Ah ja, und das ist jetzt global, ne? Bit 0, bit 1, bit 2 are false und so weiter. Und dann kommt. Dann zählt er hoch bis wohin?
Bis alle true
bis
sind.
Alle true sind. Ja gut, ist ja klar, ne? Das stimmt ja auch nicht. Value oder Next Value global stimmt
global
nicht.
Stimmt
ja,
nicht.
Genau. Und das ist wohl, wird wohl dann global interpretiert.
Schade.
Ja. Ja, man kann die einzelnen Module wohl nicht dann prüfen, ja, das stimmt. Ja. Ah, sorry.
Mein NoSMB, das gestartet mit dem, und hier ist dieses Ding.
Ja.
Und jetzt mache ich was.
Achso, du musst es gar nicht so starten mit dem, geh mal mit Quit wieder raus. Genau, du musst es einfach aufrufen mit dem mit der Datei als Parameter. Also ohne minus int.
Das, also.
Genau, wenn du das ohne minus int aufrufst, dann prüft er die ganzen Eigenschaften, die drin stehen in der Datei. Okay. Und in der Datei, genau, und da musst du eben dieses LTL-Spec-Keyword benutzen, um eine Formel dahinter anzugeben.
Dahinter oder drunter?
Nee, direkt dahinter, also das ist in einer Zeile dann eine, genau. Und da jetzt sowas wie finally und so weiter. Ja? Also ich zeige auch gleich nochmal eine komplette. Okay, so has anyone an example for me that I can quickly type in and show? Something, maybe something weird? Or, well, so. Just anything. With valid syntax, if possible. Okay, so if nobody wants to say anything, then I'll just invent something myself quickly. So let's check if it is globally true that if the first value, and you can use the Boolean here or just type equals true, that's the same of course, implies that what that next bit one value equals true. So let's check this property. And of course, what it gives me is a no answer. It is false because bit 1 value can also stay false if bit 0 value was, what does it say? Ah, it says globally, so in every state it must hold that if bit 0 value is true, then the next bit 1 value is also true. And I don't have the model here anymore, but we can think why this is false. Or we could also use the counterexample that NewSMB generates for us. So these are sometimes a bit difficult to read, these traces. But generally, all they do is they list the variables that have changed their value between steps. So in state 1.1, this is the initial state, all the variables are given with their value. And then in state 1.2, only the variables that have changed are printed. So of course, we only set the value of bit 0 in the first step. Then we set the value of bit 0 and bit 1 in the next step and so on. And this gives us a trace. And using this trace, we can of course have a look at how it fails, why it fails, where it fails, how long it takes to fail, and so on. And we could simulate this. Sorry?
It doesn't show you exactly where it fails.
No, it doesn't show you that exactly, no.
Every time I have a model which is just a circle, I get the same output every time and have to look by hand.
Yes, but you could also, and that's something that I want to show later, or maybe I can just do it now. You can use bounded model checking to find the shortest solution, the shortest failing path, because this almost is a circle. So it says here loop starts here, So it always extends to an infinite path, of course, because paths need to be infinite. But with bounded model checking, you can actually give the shortest solution. And you can just call this with minus BMC, then it employs a different model checking algorithm that first searches for paths of length 1 and then at length 2 and so on. And then it should be much shorter. So here you see exactly where it fails. So after 5 steps it fails. This is also very, very helpful in solving small puzzles. You will see that in the homework as well. Apropos, so the homework sheet for next week will be online then sometime tonight. I will prepare it depending on how far we get today. Okay, but now we've seen a trace, we've seen also what happens if something is true, probably, so you've managed to do this already. And then we can move to a simpler example. So this is a very, very simple example that is nevertheless very often used in courses like this. It's just a two-state system, and there's only one variable with two values, A and B, and the transition system is given like this. So if value is A, then we can choose between A and B non-deterministically. And if the value is B, then we need to go to the state A again. So what this shows is basically just that we have non-determinism built in using this set-like notation. And also we have a case distinction. Did I already show that in the previous example? K6? Was there a case distinction here? No. Okay, so that's also something new. Case distinction, and it doesn't really check, I think, if this case distinction is exhaustive. So you can drop out of it, and new SMV will probably complain that it might not be exhaustive and you need to add another line there, but it will run nevertheless. Sometimes it's useful, sometimes you can overlook cases. That's a bit of a drawback. So you might think of this model. I can draw it on the board just to remember it. So we have A and B in the loop here, and this setup. And this is the initial state. So you can look at this model as a sort of resource management system. So you think of A as being someone being in a requesting state. So he wants access to some resource, and once he's granted access, he needs to give this access back so someone else can request, or someone else can use the resource. So this is also easily implemented in USMV, as we've seen, the slide before. And we can check for this simple model. I hope I have it here. I think so. In the other directory, so there should be simple SMV. This should be it. No names like this. So this is this model. And we can simply check this property that I wrote on the slide. Simple module main. Wrong. Here. So is it true that globally it's the case that finally the value is B? So anyone who requests this resource is granted it infinitely often. So is it possible that someone, or no, what does it say? Access to the resource is granted infinitely often. Yeah, that's what it says. And let's check if it holds. G F val equals B. Simple no names. So of course it's not the case that it holds, because there can be a loop here that always stays in state A. And to circumvent this problem, one often just wants to look at paths that satisfy some sort of constraint, so fairness constraints, or fair execution paths, as they call it in USMB. Because you don't want these traces to appear in your simulation. And that's why fairness constraints are implemented in USMB in two different versions. So I copied this just from the manual. So there are justice constraints. And a justice constraint is just a formula, in this case a Boolean formula, so you cannot use LTL. The LTL is already built into this justice construct, so internally. And this formula is assumed to be true infinitely often in all the fair paths. So all the paths that USMB considers when evaluating an LTL formula are quantified only over these fair paths. So with these constraints, you can exclude certain paths from being searched. So you can use fairness, but justice is the new version. And the second version is the compassion constraints, which consists of pairs of formulas, also Boolean formulas. And then it says that if the first formula in this pair is true infinitely often, then also the second has to be true infinitely often. And which one could we use for this problem here? What sort of constraint is it? Is someone being compassionate in this scenario? No, I mean it's just a justice constraint, right? So it just should just be infinitely often the case that B is true, right? So the Boolean formula is this thing here, and this GF is basically what the fairness constraint does. It just says exclude GF val equals B. So you type fairness val equals B, and it ensures that all these paths are where this doesn't hold are not considered while checking the model. And then if you add this to your code, suddenly it becomes true. Counter. Okay. Maybe I have it open somewhere else. All right. So this is a different thing. Fairness, or no, justice. I'm in a wrong model, that's why. Here we go. Justice well equals B. So it's no wonder this holds now, because it just the same formula here. Okay, so specification globally, finally, value equals B is true, right? So, yeah?
Do we need the justice keyword? Isn't the justice keyword just a subset of the compression? Because if you have the P in Q pair and P is top, then same thing, right?
It should be the same thing, yes. So we can just try it out. I mean, not this again. When you do, what was it? This one. This should then be the same thing, right? Yeah. So this is no proof, of course, but. Yeah, it does the same thing, but I think justice is included for brevity. Maybe internally it even does the same thing. So maybe it just writes to compassion. Yeah, but it's clear why we want these constraints, right? Okay. Good, then this already done. This we also have done, and now there's a small exercise for you. We want to add a third state to the system, which is a sort of an idle state, so I call it idle. What should it do? From idling, it can either go to a requesting state. And also from requesting, it can go to idle. And this one I remove, and we go to idling from B. And this allows to pose some more interesting property, which says that only paths which infinitely often request the resource should also use it infinitely often. So that's clear, because now we can idle indefinitely, but if we request the resource, then we should also get it sometime. So we should not get stuck forever in this requesting thing and then go back to idling. So now you can just extend this. This system. Sorry? Yeah, of course. I forgot that. Let me just check what the model should look like in the end. Maybe I forgot something else. Idle. So from idle you can go to idle or request, right? From request you can go to request or use, yes. And from using you can go to idle or using. Ah, okay, and you can stay in this B as well, yes. There we go. So this is the system that we want. And here we can employ this nice definition section of the modules to generate some abbreviations, which are helpful a lot in longer LTL specifications. OK, Okay, so, well, we don't have too much time left, so let's just have a look at it. Simple too, I guess. And I should close it here. Okay, so looks like this. The next of val is now a case distinction with three different cases. So if we're idling, then we can go on idling or request the resource. If we're requesting the resource, then we can continue requesting it or go to using it finally. And if we're using it, we can go back to idling or using it, continue using it. And of course, this property that I mentioned here, only paths which infinitely often request the resource should also use it infinitely often, is then expressed using this compassion constraint. So if we're requesting it infinitely often, then we can use it infinitely often. So we restrict the set of paths that we remove from our search in this case. And then it is true that globally, if we request the resource, then finally we get to use it. So this should hold now. Oops. Simple two. Yes. Is this clear? Why? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah?
But isn't this formula already kind of enforced by the compression constraint?
Yes, in principally, yes. It's just to show how to deal with these problems. Yes. I mean, you cannot write a specification like this without the compassion constraints. You could have more complicated specifications that include or that imply that this has to be true. And then you need the compassion constraints to restrict the set of paths that you that you're looking at. Otherwise, you cannot make it true. Sounds a bit fishy, but okay. Then let's do a real example now. Semaphores. So you know that from what's it called? SP. So you have several processes, threads, and you want to manage the access to a shared resource using a semaphore. And now we want to model such a system where a critical section is protected by a semaphore, which is in our case just some token which can be held by only one process. So what are the properties that we would like to state here? What is a safety property in this case? Yeah?
That no two processes can hold the same semaphore?
If you want to state it like this, yes, but what's in terms of the critical section, what would that be? Yeah, okay. So no two processes can be in the critical section at the same time. Yes. Which is the same thing. Yes. And what would be a liveness property? Yes, please. So access to the, this is another one. Yes. But, the first one would be if you want, the critical section, want to access the critical section, then you are not blocked forever. So you're not blocked forever in this request resource state. And also, I think this says more because it says also that But what? Because it cannot be the same as non-blocking. Well, it probably overlaps a bit, yes. So non-blocking would be that a process can always request to enter its critical section, so it's not ever blocked to request it. You're raising your eyebrows? Well, it depends on how you interpret it, yes. But what would you say is a non-blocking property? But that cannot be, because it there can be other processes that are currently using it. Yeah, that's why I said this is a matter of interpretation. So this non-blocking is a different kind of non-blocking than in operating systems design or so. It's a non-blocking property of transition systems. Yeah, but it's a bit cloudy, that I admit. But of course, this liveness property is one of the most important, and the safety is critical. So I've prepared us some stuff for this mutual exclusion stuff, and we want to complete it now. I can just write down the stub again. Do I have this here? Da-da-da. So what was the... Okay. Okay. Oops. Like this. So, init of state next state. Wait, do I already? No. None. Assign. Okay. Oops. So let's first design the process. Of course, the process will start in a non-critical section. And how do I define the next state for, or the next value for this a state variable? Mm-hmm. Okay, so if ST is not in critical, then where can I go?
You can say not in critical, or we go to the
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I call it try enter here in this example. Okay. So. Oops. So if we're trying to enter, then what should I do? I mean, you have to look at this call of this process thing. So I give the semaphore to this process, and so this variable semaphore can either be none or ID one. So what do I need to check additionally? Mm-hmm. So this means that I have to check if my own ID is the ID that semaphore is pointing to at the moment or not. So if it's the same thing, then we can go to incritical. And if not, then we stay in try enter. And of course, if we're already in the critical section, then we can either leave the critical section or stay in the critical section. Okay, so far so good. And then the same thing for the semaphore. For the main module, so the semaphore starts orders with contents none, and the next one should also depend on its contents, of course, again. And now if some process, in this case the process, the only process that we have, tries to enter, then we give him the access, because there's no other choice. Or, well, we could, of course, deny him the access, and then we can formulate some LTL properties to show that this is a nonsensical system. But we, of course, want to do it right now. But you can try that out at home if you want. We can write it like this. So we don't give out the semaphore to anyone if no one's requesting. And third, if the process one has the semaphore, then depending on whether the process has already left it or not, we can set the semaphore to none again. So you can also use ternary operators. So I'll show you that here. Like in C. So if PST is not in critical, then none else ID1. So we keep the semaphore as ID1 as long as the process takes to finish its task in the critical section. And then finish with ESOC. Yep, that's it. I am a PST. So. So of course this is very, very boring if we only have one process. So your task would be to extend it to two processes, and I think that the homework will then be something building upon that, so you should really do that. But as we have only a quarter of an hour left, I suggest we do a second example, and you all know this lightweight puzzle where you have a ferryman, a wolf, and a goat, and a cabbage. And the task is that this ferryman should just take the other three over the river. And of course, the wolf would eat the goat, and the goat would eat the cabbage. So you cannot leave the wolf together with the goat on one side. And the question is whether the good ferryman can fulfill this task without someone being eaten. And of course, the first question would be then, why could model checking be of any use here? Why should we be able to solve it using model checking? Any ideas? What properties of model checking we could use here? Yeah.
Our model can be every possible combination, and then the model checker spans the graph and checks if any of those paths would work.
Mm-hmm. And how do we get a solution? Because, well, mostly we enter some property, and then UCB says yes, it holds. Done. So how what would be the property? And we want a solution that gives us a way to do it, not only. So the question is then actually how can he do it? So yes, of course we could answer both questions. We can put the question into the model checker: can he do it? And then he would just say yes. But we can also ask the different question: can he not do it? And then we would get the answer, yes, he can do it, and this is how. And this is the interesting part, of course. So what we use is the output of a counterexample in case this specification is false. But of course, yes, I posed this question wrong. Okay, so how can we model this? What would be a suitable description of the system that arises? What would be the variables in the system? How and what values would the variables have? What would be a transition? Yeah, think for a while, and then so any ideas how to model this? No one? Yeah,
I would make a module or something for the wolf, the goat, the cabbage.
Okay.
It's the variable, their state, where they are,
mm-hmm.
on the one side, on the other side, or on the both.
Mm-hmm.
And then model the transition in the way that they can from one side to the boat to the other side,
mm-hmm.
or
do you even need the boat? Probably not, right? So transition from one side to the other side is enough. The boat is just an intermediate thing, so from one side to the boat is always necessary, and from the boat to the other side as well. Okay, so transition from the left side to the right side indicated by variable by a Boolean number, a Boolean value, for example. Yes. So, and why the module? Do you want to put something else into the module for these guys?
No, just keep it modular. They all have the same.
Ah, okay. So yes, you call them. Mm-hmm. So your idea would be, let's try. Let's say module passenger, and then what would be the parameter? Some ID, right? So let's call it ID or name or type or whatever. And then we have a variable section, and let's call it position. So a Boolean value. And the initial position is false, so the left side of the river, or we can say left, and to define like this, and now it gets interesting. So, do I have the possibility to make this choice here already? So, is it sensible to use this modular representation? So, you mean asynchronously? But then you need the as input. You need more. You need information about all the other passengers. Because you cannot decide inside the module whether he's allowed to step on the boat or step to the other side or not. So the idea is good, but we can probably even make do without without modules. So what we are doing is just we're doing a main module. And then instead of position, we only have four passengers, right? So let's just make a variable for every passenger, a Boolean value. So let's call it wolf. And then we have, ferryman, of course. Then we have the wolf. Then we have, the goat. And we have the cabbage. But then there's one more variable that we need. There's an additional piece of information missing in the riddle. And this is that the ferryman can only transport one single creature at the time in his boat. Otherwise, it would be easy. So, in addition to the ferryman, he can only take one passenger. Yes. one passenger. Okay. Okay. Is a cabbage a passenger? Probably not. A bit contrived, this whole riddle. Yes. So, of course, we need another variable. What's he carrying, right? And this is either either the wolf or the goat or the cabbage or nothing. So we can add just constants here. So this is, by the way, an enumeration type using just some constants. Okay, so this is the initial setup. And then this we don't need, but we need initial of ferryman. And then the same thing for the others.
Can you
I defined left to be false. and what else? Cabbage. Oh, I hope this works with the define. I didn't try it. And so, by the way, for this, there's another notation that you can also find in the new SMB manual. So you can specify an init section with a Boolean formula, and then this would be like this. So this is like this. So this line is the same thing as these five lines. So you just specify a formula that not all of these, that all of these must be false, and the carry must be none. Comment out. Okay, and then what's left is an assign section. Where we actually give the okay, this doesn't work anymore. I should put this in the comment as well. And these things, these things in the assign section. Okay. And now we need to specify the next transition of all the variables. So let's start with the carry, the most interesting one. So what would be one case of this transition? Okay, I can give you one and you tell me the others. So if the ferryman is on the same side, which is then expressed by just equality of Boolean values as the goat, then he can, of course, take the goat with him. This is one case or one possibility. And you can use the union keyword to build up a set of possibilities. So this case distinction is there because it need not be the case that the ferryman is on the same side as the goat. So we have this fallback option here. In all other cases, none is added to a set using this union notation. So in the end, we build up a set where none is present in any case, and the other options are there depending on how the constellation is at the moment. So a second option would be that the ferryman is on the same side as the cabbage. Then he can take the cabbage with him. And again, ferryman, same side as wolf. Then he can take the wolf with him. And we union that with none to make sure that none is in the set always. Okay, so next goat. So where is what is the next position of the goat? So remember that the variables for the passengers tell us on which side of the river they are. And I should probably add Oops. Like this. So when does a goat change sides? Sounds like the beginning of a joke. Yeah? Uh-huh. So if carry next of carry, and this is also important, you can call the next operator also in the formulas on the right-hand side. And is there an additional constraint to this? Or does it suffice? I guess.
What do you want to do now? Do you want to invert the value or do you want to set it directly?
No, but I have a solution here on my screen, and I think that maybe this is even too much. Let's check if this is sufficient, right? So like this. So if the ferryman carries it in the next step, then the side is changed according to where the ferryman goes at the moment. So we don't even need to decide whether it's left or right. And in all the other cases, well, it just stays at the same place, so goat. the indentation is crap. Like this. So and the same, of course, for the other passengers. I can just copy paste this. Oops, what have I done? Goat, wolf, like this. And then we're set, right? No, the ferryman is missing. Oh, yeah. Thanks. So we're already over the time. If you have a few minutes left, then we can just finish this. And damn it. Okay. So one last thing: the LTL specification for the solution. So what do we want to check? We want to check that the goat is at this on the same side as the cabbage. Or that the goat is on the same side as the wolf. So these are the situations when somewhat would get eaten. So the goat would eat the cabbage and the goat would eat the wolf. And that needs to imply that the goat is on the same side as the ferryman. And this is not all, but we need to check if this is true until the cabbage and the goat and the wolf and the ferryman are on the same side again. And now I think I've got one. There's something wrong here. Goat is equals garbage. Ah, there's another. Yep. Okay. And then we negate the whole thing to get a trace in case it fails. Okay, let's check it quickly. New SMV ferryman. Parser error, great. Line 28. Syntax error. Where's the syntax error here? Does it tell me? Line 28. A token colon is a
missing case.
Oh yes, it's missing cases. Did I do that again? No. Now it gets something done. So and again, this of course is now a trace that is an infinite path. And in order to get the shortest solution, we call it with minus BMC again. And then we get a solution which we can just read off the changes of variables. But as we're over the time already, thank you for your attention and see you next week.